Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
As we continue our addictions series on Open House, we turn to oniomania today, the addiction to shopping. The term oniomania surprisingly originated as far back as 1915, but it's only in recent years that this addiction, also called overspending or excessive buying or compulsive shopping, has been acknowledged as a legitimate disorder. It doesn't have the same more obvious effects as other addictions, perhaps like drugs or alcohol, but it does bring havoc to relationships as families crumble under mounting debt. Counsellor and addiction specialist Michelle Laving is a pioneer in the treatment of shopping addiction in Australia. Michelle, thank you for joining us on Open House. What's the difference between somebody who heads out on the occasional splurge and somebody with a shopping addiction?
Yeah, sure. Thanks. And thanks for having me on the show, Dwayne. Well, look, most of us can have occasional splurges, which are normal, especially at times during holiday periods. But the majority of us can maybe get our spending and shopping patterns under control shortly afterwards, or maybe if there's a consequence to overspending, we're, you know, that'll be enough for us to get back to controlled spending afterwards. But people with a legitimate shopping addiction or problematic shopping have a different pattern to their shopping, which is it's usually grounded in social and psychological needs. For example, they may persistently overshop and spend to help regulate their mood or to fill a void in their lives. And the key difference is with a splurge and someone with a shopping addiction is someone with a shopping addiction will continue to shop and spend despite the negative consequences afterwards. So even if they've got financial stress or relationship stress, they'll continue the pattern of overspending.
You're a pioneer in this area, Michelle. When did you discover this emerging addiction in our community?
Well, I think it was about, I was doing a master's degree and it was a specialisation in the addictions field. And this was about 3 years ago. And I knew I wanted to do something in the area of addictions and more behavioural addictions rather than substance addictions. And I thought of shopping because I've known a few friends with the issue too. And I did some research and I found that there was a lot of work being done over in the States, but not so much here in Australia. So I consulted with a lady called Dr. April Benson, who's a real pioneer in this work. She's been doing it for about 20 years and got a lot of great information from her for my studies. And then after I finished my studies, because there wasn't much here in the way of support for people with these issues and even much of a discourse around it, I decided to start my own private work and education around it here in Australia.
Out of that research, what do we understand about the numbers of people that are addicts to shopping?
Yeah, well, listen, it's hard to get the stats here in Australia, but I know there was a really big study in the US in 2004, and they found that approximately 6% of the US population would identify themselves as compulsive shoppers. And they think that similar statistics are estimated in other Western countries. And that's because we have comparable consumer trends. We have easy access to credit cards and disposable income compared to more poorly developed countries. But I think what I've read recently too is the average Australian credit card debt is around just under $4,500. So, and also there's a rising trend with online shopping as well.
When we hear of something like a shopping addiction, it has attendant to it perhaps a light-hearted approach. Oh yeah, she's a shopaholic or he's a shopping addict, he can't help himself. What kind of destructive capacity does a shopping addiction have on relationships or even just on a one-on-one personal level?
It's a good question, and you're absolutely right. It's something that we laugh about and joke about, and it's actually, in the field, we call it the smiled-upon addiction. Because over-shopping and overspending is seen as a normal cultural norm, and also the media kind of endorses it as well, it's hard for people to actually know where the line is between, you know, overspending versus, you know, when it's developing into a problem addiction. But look, the ramifications can be really real for people, and some of those obvious ones are financial. People can accumulate a massive amount of debt and find it unmanageable, and that's when they usually turn up to a financial counsellor, for example, to deal with it. Relationship-wise, it can cause great stress on relationships when a partner is confused and upset with the other partner's spending. Also just on a psychological level, just the confusion and shame and guilt around your shopping and spending behaviour. Sometimes people are not sure why they continue to engage in the behaviour and are embarrassed and shameful about it. And sometimes it's quite a secret affliction that they just keep to themselves. And important to note too that some people can get to a point where they're actually feeling quite suicidal about the financial situation they've got themselves in. And I'll also just on a spiritual level too, you know, the constant need to pursue and accumulate items can leave people feeling quite empty and spiritually bereft as well.
How can we work towards breaking out of one of these addictions?
Okay, well, look, I think for some people it might be that they just need to do some of the following. Some people might need to actually look at speaking to a professional to unpack a little bit about what the function of the behaviour is, what's driving it. If they're finding that they're having repeated attempts to try and curb their shopping and spending and are not able to do so, maybe speaking to a specialist in this area might be a great way to unpack what's happening for them and what's driving this need. But other things you can do as well is just be mindful of how factors such as mood and compulsive tendencies influence your shopping behaviour. So notice that if you're when you're feeling frustrated, bored or angry, if there's a drive there to shop, maybe ask yourself what else you can do to manage those moods in a healthier way. If you know that when you shop at those times may lead to overspending. And also ask people just to be mindful of what they're really shopping for. So is this about my need, for example, to project I need to buy this bag to project an image of wealth or status? Or do I really need this item? So look at what the underlying function of it is. And also I ask people in my work to plan ahead. So if they're going out shopping and they have a tendency to overspend, maybe plan ahead and only take the money that they need. Avoid browsing if they think that's a particular trigger for them. And even go with shop with someone or a shopping buddy who's also got similar goals in terms of their spending as well. It'll be a good influence on you.
There'll be many people listening right now, Michelle, to parts of this conversation thinking, it may not be me, but I know somebody who probably shows some of these signs. Sure. What do we do as family and friends, both to be of assistance and certainly not to exacerbate the problem?
Yeah, that's a good point too. Well, I think the first thing is to realise there's only so much you can do for your loved one or friend. They need to make the changes yourself. But if you're a family member, I think you need to, if you want to address it with your loved one, first of all, I say pay attention to your feelings. So if you're feeling resentful, disappointed or even contempt towards their behaviour, just be mindful of those feelings before you intervene. So I think one of the things that can be unhelpful is if you get into accusing the person, shouting, screaming at them, that just leads people to become more defensive and sometimes more secretive about their behaviour. So check your own feelings around it first and then maybe tell them without judgment what you see. So it's simply stating, you know, I can really see that, you know, you're spending a lot of money. What's happening for you at the moment? So saying that without judgment and telling them that you'd like to help and that there is help for overshopping. And I think acknowledging for people that it is a legitimate concern, that it's not just a silly thing, that some people really have a drive to do this and it's usually meeting an underlying need. So having that sort of compassion will go a long way. And I think if you can get someone to see a financial counsellor or a specialist in the area, that could be good. And if after someone's had that support, also just be mindful that there might be times where they have a relapse and slip back a little bit, and just to be encouraging around that, and maybe just encouraging them also to be mindful when they shop, to think about how they feel when they're shopping and thinking about taking a pause and asking themselves, do I really need to buy this now? Can I afford it? And what if I wait? So those things can all be really helpful.
Michelle, one last question. Given that you were one of the first in Australia to start to recognise the symptoms and correlate some evidence within this country, are there now more services available to us outside of financial counsellors, those who go to the mental health aspects of overshopping or shopping addiction, than there were when you started out? And where do we go to find them?
Yeah, okay. Well, first of all, I'm glad you mentioned financial counsellors because they are just an invaluable support for people and it's a free service and they're wonderful. Look, from what I know, there isn't a huge amount of people specialising in this area. There will be addiction specialists who perhaps are familiar with this problem and can work with it quite effectively. But in terms of real specialists, I think there probably aren't as many as there could be, as far as I know. I think maybe another issue is that there might be not be widespread screening of this issue in a counselling setting too. So it's great that, you know, people like yourself are bringing this to the table so that hopefully more counsellors can actually screen for this up front rather than it being a condition or problem that unravels as the counselling proceeds and people are in dire straits. I think also there's another group called Debtors Anonymous. I'm not sure if you've heard of them.
No.
Based on the 12-step programs, you probably listeners have heard of the Alcoholics Anonymous groups.
Yeah.
So that's a program of surrender and recovery in gradual steps with a spiritual emphasis. And the Debtors Anonymous groups aim to avoid accumulating in any new debt, including credit cards, loaning money from friends and not paying bills. So for some people, that might be really, really supportive. So that's the Debtors Anonymous groups, and they're Australia-wide. So people can go to those. And then I have the work that I do, which is called, my organisation is called Steps to Simplicity. And I provide specialist therapeutic and educational information to services and to individuals with problem shopping behaviour.
And your website is steps2simplicity.com.au.
That's right, and two with T-O. And I just want to say too, I offer a comprehensive 12-week program, but I'm also interested in just speaking to people who may just want to have a one-off consultation and just check out their behaviour. They may be having a few concerns and just want to see... learn a little bit more about what's happening for them as well.
Michelle, thank you so much for your contribution to our addictions series on Open House, and in particular, shopping addictions or over-shopping. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you so much, Dwayne. Thank you. Bye.
Michelle Laving, working with those who are chronically addicted to over-shopping or overspending. Jill Chivers is a successful Australian businesswoman with a background in running major IT projects. And then in 2009, she realised she had a problem. She was spending way too much money on clothes. Jill decided to do something about it and went cold turkey. Not only that, but she now runs an online program to help other women who are facing a similar addiction. Jill, thank you for joining us. Share with us that moment when you realised you had a problem with overshopping.
Yes, I did have a wake-up moment, which was then, it was like dominoes. Then I had a series of insights, and when you stacked them all together, the picture was very clear. Hindsight's wonderful, isn't it, when you can look back at these things.
Yes.
When you're facing them, facing forward, it can often take a little bit of time, and that's what it was like for me. And I'd come back from a trip to San Francisco, a work trip. I'd been a board member of a not-for-profit association, and I'd had this really busy 10-day trip, and yet I'd found all this time in between all of this busyness to shop and buy over $1,000 worth of things that I didn't need. And I'd had this one moment in this store where I'd seriously considered buying this item. And for the women who were listening, they may be able to relate to this. It was an animal print trench coat. And I had it in my hand, and I was looking at it, and I was going through all the mental machinations about how great it was and the colour and the fit, and it was on sale and this and it was that. And then it struck me that I had three animal print jackets at home.
Goodness.
And I'd literally forgotten that. In that moment of holding this item in my hands and imagining its fabulousness when I would wear it, I'd forgotten that I had three items almost identical to it. And that moment really did stay with me, where I thought, what has gone awry here that I would seriously... I was on my way to the cash register to purchase this item. And so that really was an aha moment. And then shortly after that, when I got home, I was driving home from doing the groceries. That was when the moment came upon me, and this thought flew into my head like a bird into my brain and said, you have to stop shopping. And, of course, I didn't want to listen to that. It was a terrifying thought to me, but it wouldn't go away. And so it kept coming back to me, and I decided that was what I was going to do.
Jill, already in our discussion around addictions, we found that there are a number of common traits across all of them. They include a justification for an addiction, at times the need to hide that you are addicted to something. Did you have any of these traits in your life as an overspender?
Yes. Yes, I had. When you overshop and you know it's a problem, some part of your psyche, your body, your being knows, and so all these other little mechanisms come in to try and protect you. So you either look better or people don't know what's going on, and it can make you quite deceptive. Mm. And people who are normally very honest in their dealings with other people can find themselves engaging in behaviours like keeping bags in the boot and not bringing them in, or getting rid of the packaging and stuffing things into handbags that have grown larger for this very purpose, or just flat out lying. This old thing I've had it for ages when you only bought it yesterday. Yeah. And, you know, those kinds of things can become fairly typical. I wasn't too deceptive, but certainly I engaged in enough of those kinds of behaviours. And I guess the big one was just not wanting to own it, just downplaying it. It can't be that bad. And look at all those wonderful signs. You know, I'd quit shopping, but I'm not a quitter, and all those other things that I now realise are ridiculous. But at the time, you find a way to justify your behaviour and make it reasonable to yourself.
You do something that very few people do.
Mm.
You decide to go 1 year without shopping for clothes. Now, how did that promise to yourself take place, and who did you start sharing it with, and what were their reactions?
Yes, I knew I had to do that because I was so frightened to do it. And that really, I know that sounds circular, but if you said I had to go a year without coffee, a year without watching football, a year without chocolate, a year without cheese, I could go a year. I've probably gone a year without a lot of those things without even noticing it. It wouldn't even spike my heart monitor, the thought of that. And the fact that I felt so terrified of this challenge really reinforced for me that there was something I had to learn here, that I had to do this. And the fear was a marker that it was a necessary step for me. And I knew that if I wasn't public about it, I would find a way to skirt around the really tough part. So I started a blog straight away, just an amateur blog on a free blog platform. And I sent it around to a bunch of friends. And I got back, normally the universal messages in return were some form of, isn't this great, and I don't think you'll make it.
Yeah, right.
Some version of that. So trying to be encouraging, but realistic in the fact that you're trying this.
Yeah.
And I knew if I didn't stick to blogging, and I committed to blogging twice a week, that I it would be too easy just to not do it and not tell anyone and stop the challenge and weasel around it. And I knew I'd have to set some structures in place that didn't let me off the hook, because I was already really good at letting myself off the hook.
3 months in, you buy something.
It actually turned out to be a really good thing, although maybe that's just my way of seeing the glass as being half full. But I took some positives out of that. It happened because I went into a store that I knew normally held things that I liked. And that was a really important learning for me, and that's a really important structure for those who are struggling with overshopping, is to think about the environment you allow yourself to go into. Because for a lot of overshoppers, they're unconscious. They're asleep at the wheel while they're shopping. They just find themselves in mire, and they're not quite sure how they got there or how these three bags ended up in their hand. And that's one of the ways to turn this around, is to add a great deal more awareness. Where are you now? Are you in an environment where you're vulnerable? And I allowed myself to go into this store just to have a look, which of course is another justifying behaviour that those of us who've overshopped engage in quite a lot. I'm just going to have a look. And I saw this thing, and I went to rattle off quickly all the, you know, it fit me and it was this and it was that and it was on sale and blah, 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 and I bought it. And literally as I was walking back to the car, the pit of my stomach just was heavy, and I knew I'd let myself down. It forced me to do two things. One, to say, do I really want to do this? Because if I really want to do this, I have to stop this kind of behaviour. And yes, it's going to hurt, and I have to be prepared for that. So if I'm not committed to it, abandon it now. Just admit defeat and carry on as you were. And that was not an alternative I could face, but certainly I had to look at that. And it acted as a reminder for me, so that I was more careful about being in shopping environments, and I really recommitted to myself that I needed to do this. This was not optional. And one mistake, We're human, we're allowed mistakes. But if I continue to make that same mistake over and over again, well, then I wasn't taking it seriously, and I should be honest about that. And I guess this was an exercise in honesty. The whole year was an exercise in honesty, and so it was helpful from that regard.
Jill, you mentioned that you found a lot of your identity, your emotional support for yourself, by overspending. Where did you go to find that support when you went cold turkey?
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing about using shopping or anything else to excess to feel those emotions is it's a very weak substitute, and you have to keep doing it over and over again, which tells you something about how effective it is. It has an immediate payoff, but then that rubs off pretty quickly. And as your tolerance for using that behaviour to fill an emotional need grows, you need to do it more frequently or to a more intense level or for longer. And that's why it's a terrible way of having your emotional needs met, is because it really doesn't work. It's not soul fulfilling. It doesn't fill you up emotionally. It doesn't satisfy your need for intellectual challenge or physical challenge for any length of time. And anybody who's had any kind of addictive problem knows how true that is. That's why you have to keep going back to the well to keep filling up. It's like you're trying to draw water out of a well with a colander. You can never really meet that need. There is not enough pair of animal print boots to meet that need, and I am a living testament to how true that is. So for me, engaging in self-care of another kind was really important. My writing was part of that. It was a way to whinge in public, but it was also a way to explore things. And I started to meet other people who had suffered with this kind of thing and who had written about it or worked in this area. And, of course, that was part of what gave me the idea to start a program for other women, was meeting all these people who were working in this area. And I thought, oh, wow, there's a whole crowd of us out here that I didn't even know existed. And that's so important, to know you're not the only one, and you're not, in fact, crazy or insane or any other negative thing you could say about yourself, that there are others who get it and who understand. And that was really a bit of a soul salve for me as well. Plus, giving to myself what I know I needed the most, because you can't outsource that. Nobody can give you self-care. That's why it's called self-care. And so I started to be kinder to myself.
At the end of the year, did you feel compelled to head back to the shops?
No, I didn't feel compelled to go back to the shops. And it became clear about month 6 of my year without clothes shopping that if I were to do that, the whole challenge would have been a failure, because it would have meant I was holding my breath for the entire year, just waiting, just hanging out until I could go shopping. And if that's all I got out of it, well, then all I did was save a few bucks by not shopping for that year. And I wanted the change to be on a deeper level. So no, I didn't. I went shopping about 6 weeks after my year finished, and I went for necessities. There's this thing about the elastic in underwear, it wears out. And so that's what I went to buy, and that felt like a necessity. And I had all these processes around what for me constituted healthy shopping. So I instituted a lot of awake behaviours around my shopping, and I've since relaxed a few of those now that I know that this change has actually stuck. I don't have to be so rigid with myself with those rules. And this is important. This may be a lifelong journey for me, that a year didn't fix me. A year started a journey of healing for me, and it was a very important year, and I walked very many steps in that year, but I continue to walk that path. And that's okay. I've made that okay, that the emotional component of that journey is quite complex and long, but certainly that year helped to heal a lot of the things that I was unconsciously using shopping to fill.
Jill, we've covered a fair bit of territory from the perspective of an overshopper. Stepping out of that boundary for a moment, how do we as family and friends support an overshopper in their recovery?
Well, certainly an attitude of kindness is very important, and one of the reasons for that is people who are shop are often very, very hard on themselves. They say awful things to themselves. And if you then come in and say awful things to them, then it can be too much. And it can be the kind of thing where somebody just says, I can't go anywhere near that. It's too painful. And so being kind is really important. Gentle, open-ended questions can be helpful. You know, tell me a little bit about your shopping. Tell me how much you shop or how much you think about it. And the non-judgmental part of that is really important, because those of us who are overshopped are often hypersensitive to the reactions of others or the imagined potential reactions of others. So if you can listen to somebody talk about their shopping without inserting any judgment or facial expressions that indicate, you know, you think the problem is superficial or small or self-created or anything else, then you give that person a space to perhaps be honest where they've never been able to be honest before. You know, and then a little bit of research, a little bit of information, you know, starting on that journey of what can I do and is this real and what are some of the choices that I now have. And, you know, that kind of thing can be incredibly helpful and actually transformative for a person.
Jill Cheevers, thanks for bringing overshopping to our addictions conversation. We'll put a link to your website on ours at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Thank you very much, Dwayne.